The Sunbird by Wilbur Smith. Part 1. It cut across the darkened projection room and exploded silently against the screen. And I didn't recognize it. I'd waited 15 years for it, and when it came, I didn't recognize it. The image was swirled and vague, and it made no sense to me, for I'd expected a photograph of some small object, a skull, perhaps, or pottery, or an artifact, a piece of goldwork, beads. Certainly not this surrealistic pattern of grey and white and black. Lurin's voice, tight with excitement, gave me the clue I needed. Taken at 36th hour, 6:47 on the 4th of September. That was 8 days ago. Exposed in a 33mm Leica. An aerial photograph, then. My eyes and brain adjusted, and almost instantly I felt the first tickle of my own excitement begin as Lurin went on in the same crisp tone. I've got a charter company running an aerial survey over all my concessionaries. The idea is to pick the strike and run of geographical formations. This photograph is only one of a couple of 100,000 of the area. The navigator didn't even know what he was photographing. However, the people in analysis spotted it and passed it on to me. His face turned towards me, pale and solemn in the glare of the projector. You can see it, can't you, Ben? Just off center, top right quarter. I opened my mouth to reply, but my voice caught in my throat, and I had to turn the sound I made into a cough. With surprise, I found I was trembling, and my guts seethed with an amalgam of hope and dread. It's classic. Acropolis, double enclosure, and the phallic towers. He was exaggerating. They were faint outlines, indistinct, and in places disappearing. But the general shape and configuration was right. North, I blurted. Where's north?
Top of picture.
She's right, Ben. Facing north. Could the towers be sun-orientated? I didn't speak again. The reaction was coming swiftly now. Nothing in my life had been this easy. Therefore, this was suspect, and I searched for the flaws. Stratification, I said. Probably limestone in contact with the country granite, throwing surface patterns.
Oh, bull!
Lauren cut in, the excitement still bubbling in his voice. He jumped up and strode to the screen, picked up an ebony pointer from the lectern, and used it to spot the cell-like stippling around the outline of what he was pleased to presume was the main enclosure.
You tell me, were you ever seen geological patterns like that?
I didn't want to accept it. I didn't want to make myself vulnerable again with hope.
Perhaps, I said.
Damn you! He laughed now, and the sound was good, for he didn't laugh often these days.
I should have known you'd fight it. You are, without doubt, the most miserable bloody pessimist in Africa.
It could be anything, Lo, I protested. Trick of light, trick of shade, shape. Even conceding that it's man-made. It could be recent gardens or agriculture.
100 miles from the nearest surface water.
Oh, forget it, Ben. You know as well as I do that this is the...
Don't say it!
I almost shouted, and was out of the padded leather chair, across the projection room, and had hold of his arm before I realized I'd moved.
Don't say it, I repeated. It's bad luck.
I always stutter when I'm excited, but it is the least of my physical disabilities, and I've long ago ceased worrying about it. Lauren laughed again, but with the trace of uneasiness he shows whenever I move quickly or unleash the strength of my arms. He stooped over me now and eased my fingers that were sunk into the flesh of his forearm.
Oh, sorry, did I hurt you?
I released the grip.
No.
But he massaged his arm as he moved to the control panel and doused the projector, then turned the wall switch, and we stood blinking at each other in the light.
My little Yiddish leprechaun, he smiled. You can't fool me. You're wetting yourself.
I looked up at him, ashamed of my outburst now, but still excited.
Where is it, Lo? Where did you find it? I want you to admit it first. I want you to go out on a limb for once in your life. I want you to say it. Before I'll tell you another thing, he teased. All right. I looked away and picked my words. It looks, at first glance, quite interesting. And he threw back that great golden head and bellowed with bull laughter. You're going to have to do a lot better than that. Let's try again. His laughter I cannot resist, and my own followed immediately. I was aware of its bird-like quality against his. It looks to me, I wheezed, as though you may have found it. You beauty, he shouted. You little beauty. It was years since I'd seen him like this. The solemn banker's mask stripped away. The cares of the Stuyvesant financial empire forgotten in this moment of promise and achievement. Now, tell me, I pleaded, where did you find it? Come, he said, serious again, and we went to the long table against the wall. There was a chart spread and pinned on the green baize. It was a high table, and I scrambled quickly onto a chair and leaned across it. Now I was almost on equal terms with Loren, who stood beside me. We pored over the chart. Aeronautical Series A, Southern Africa Chart 3, Botswana and Western Rhodesia. I searched it quickly, looking for some indication. A cross or pencil mark, perhaps. Where? I said. Where? You know that I've got 25,000 square miles of mineral concession down here south of Morn. Come on, Lo, don't try and sell me shares in Stuyvesant Minerals. Where the hell is it? It can't be that far south of the gold series. It isn't, Loren reassured me. Throttle back, you'll rupture something. He was enjoying himself tormenting me. His finger moved across the chart and stopped suddenly. My heart seemed to stop with it. It was looking better and better. The latitude was perfect. All the clues I had so painstakingly gathered over the years pointed to this general area. Here, he said, 212 miles southeast of Morn, 56 miles from the southwestern beacon of the Wanky Game Reserve, tucked below a curb of low hills, lost in a wilderness of rock and dry land scrub. When can we leave? I asked. Wow! And Loren shook his head. You do believe it. You really do. Someone else could stumble on it. It's been lying there for 1,000 years. Another week won't... Another week? I cried in anguish. Ben, I can't get away before then. I've got the annual general meeting of the Anglo-Stuyvesant on Friday, and on Saturday I have business in Zurich. But I'll cut it short, especially for you. Cut it altogether, I begged. Send one of your bright young men. When somebody lends you 25 million, it's only polite to go and fetch the check yourself. You don't send the office boy. Christ, Lo, it's only money. This is really important. For a moment, Loren looked at me, the pale blue eyes bemused and reflective. 25 million is only money? He shook his head slowly and then wonderingly, as though he'd heard a new truth spoken. I suppose you're right. He smiled gently now, the smile of affection for a well-loved friend. Sorry, Ben. All right, Tuesday. We'll fly at dawn, I promise you. We'll recce from the air, and then land at morn. Peter Larkin, you know him? Yes, very well. Peter ran a big safari business out of Morn. Twice I've used him on my Kalahari expeditions. Oh, good. I've been on to him already. He'll service the expedition. We'll go in light and fast. One Land Rover and a pair of 3-ton Unimogs. I can only spare 5 days. And that's a squeeze. But I'll get a charter helicopter to fetch me out, and I'll leave you to scratch around. As he talked, Loren led me out to the projection room into the long gallery. Sunlight spilled in through the high windows, giving good light to the paintings and sculptures that decorated the gallery. Here, works of the leading South African artists mingled easily with those of the great internationals, living and dead. Lawrence Stuyvesant and his ancestors before him had spent money wisely. Even now, in the urgency of the moment, my eyes were tugged aside by the soft, fleshy glow of a Renoir nude. Lorin paced easily over the sound-deadening pile of oriental carpets, and I matched him stride for stride. My legs are as long as his and as powerful. If you turn up what we're both hoping for, then you can go in full scale. Permanent camp, airstrip, assistants of your choice, full crew, and any equipment you call for. Please, God, let it happen, I said softly, and at the head of the staircase we paused. Lorin and I grinned at each other like conspirators. You know what it would cost? I asked. We might be digging for 5 or 6 years. I hope so, he agreed. Could run into a couple of 100,000. It's only money, like the man said. And again that great bull laugh started me off. We went down the staircase, roaring and tittering, each in his own way. Elated and hyper-tense, we faced each other in the hall. I'll be back 7:30 Monday evening. Can you meet me at the airport? Alitalia flight 310 from Zurich. In the meantime, you get your end arranged. I'll need a copy of that photograph. I've already had an enlargement delivered by hand to the Institute. You've got a week to gloat over it. He glanced at the gold piaget on his wrist. Oh, damn, I'm late. He turned to the doorway at the moment that Hilary Stuyvesant came through from the patio. She wore a short white tennis dress, and her legs were long and achingly beautiful. A tall girl, with gold-brown hair hanging shiny and soft to her shoulders. Darling, you aren't going. I'm sorry, Hill, I meant to tell you. I wouldn't be staying for lunch, but Ben will need somebody to hold him down. You've shown him. She turned and came to me, stooped to kiss me on the lips easily and naturally, with not the least sign of revulsion, and then she stepped back and smiled full into my eyes. Every time she does that, she makes me her slave for another 100 years. What do you think of it, Ben? Is it possible? But before I could answer, Lorin had slipped his arm about her waist, and they both smiled down at me. He's doing his nut, frothing at the mouth and doing backflips. Wants to rush into the desert now, this minute. And then he pulled Hilary to him and kissed her. For a long minute, they were oblivious of my presence as they embraced. They are, for me, the epitome of beautiful woman and manhood, both of them tall, strong, and well-favored. Hilary is younger than he is by 12 years, his fourth wife, and the mother of only the youngest of his 7 children. In her middle 20s, she has the maturity and poise of a much older woman. Give Ben some lunch, my darling. I'll be home late. Lorin pulled away from the embrace. I'll miss you, Hilary said. And I you. See you Monday, Ben. Cable Larkin, if you think of anything special we'll need. So long, partner. And he was gone. Hilary took my hand and led me out onto the wide, flagged patio. 5 acres of lawn and dazzling flower beds sloped gently down to the stream and artificial lake. Both tennis courts were occupied, and a shrieking mob of small, near-naked bodies thrashed the water of the swimming pool to sun-sparkled white. 2 uniformed servants were laying out a cold buffet on the long patio trestle table, and with a small, squirming twinge of dread, I saw 6 young matrons in tennis dress sprawled in the lounging chairs beside the outside bar. They were flushed with exertion, perspiration dampened the crisp white dresses, and they sipped at long, dewy, fruit-laden glasses of Pimm's No. 1. Come, said Hilary, and led me towards them. I steeled myself, trying to draw myself up to an extra inch of height as we moved towards the group. Girls, we've got a man to keep us company. I want you to meet Dr. Benjamin Cazine, Dr. Kazin is the director of the Institute of African Anthropology and Prehistory. Ben, this is Marjorie Phelps. I turned to each of them as she spoke their names, and I acknowledged the slightly over-effusive greetings, giving each my eyes and voice. They are my good things. It was as difficult for them as it was for me. You do not expect your hostess to spring a hunchback on you with the pre-lunch drinks. The children rescued me. Bobby spotted me and came at a run, shrieking, "Uncle Ben! Uncle Ben!" She flung her cold, wet arms around my neck and pressed her sopping bathing costume to my new suit before dragging me away to become overwhelmed by the rest of the Stuyvesant brood and their hordes of young friends. I find it easier with children. They either don't seem to notice, or they come straight out with it. Why do you walk all bent over like that? For once, I wasn't very good value. I was too preoccupied to give them my full attention, and soon they drifted away, all but Bobby, for she is ever loyal. Then Hilary took over from her stepdaughter, and I was returned to the League of Young Mothers, where I made a better impression. I cannot resist pretty women, once the forced awkwardness wears off. It was 3 o'clock before I left for the Institute. Bobby Stuyvesant pours Glen Grant malt whiskey with the same heavy 13-year-old hand she uses to pour Coca-Cola. Consequently, I floated into the Institute feeling very good indeed. The envelope was on my desk, marked private and confidential, with a note pinned to one corner. "This came for you at lunchtime. Looks exciting. Sal." With a quick stab of jealousy, I inspected the seal of the envelope. It was unbroken. Sally hadn't been into it, but I knew it must have taken all her self-control, for she has an almost neurotic curiosity. She calls it a fine, inquiring scientific mind. I guessed she would arrive within the next 5 minutes, so I found the packet of 3X peppermints in my top drawer and slipped one into my mouth to smother the whiskey fumes before I opened the envelope and drew out the glossy 12x12 enlargement, switched on the desk light, and adjusted it and the magnifying table lens over the print. Then I looked round at the hosts of the past that crowd my office. All four walls are lined with shelves, and from floor to shoulder height, my shoulder height, these are filled with books, the tools of my trade, all bound in brown and green calfskin, and titled in gold leaf. It's a big room, and there are many thousands of volumes. The shelves above the books carry the plaster busts of all the creatures that preceded man, head and shoulders only. Australopithecus, Proconsul Robusta, Rhodesian Man, Peking, all of them up to the Neanderthal, and finally the Cro-Magnon himself, Homo sapiens sapiens, in all his glory and infamy. The shelves to the right of my desk are laden with busts of all the typical ethnic types found in Africa. Hamites, Arabs, Pygmies, the Negroids, Boskops, Bushmen, Greeker, Hottentot, and all the others. They watched me attentively with their bulging glass eyes as I addressed them.